My name is Sandy, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization, which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, JD and Irina, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and/or understanding. Lisa will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other. They may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety.
Giselle will read the traditions. Brian will read the steps.
Hi, I'm Brian. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 steps. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having made a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs.
Giselle will read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Giselle. I'm an alcoholic. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on traction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity, the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Woo!
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Heidi.
Hi, my name is Heidi. I'm an alcoholic. Golly, I'm grateful to be here. I really need to speak, and I'm told that you need to listen, so I'm so pleased that... Hey, listen, it's me too. I know. I'm the one who needed to listen about November of last year, because I got to a point in my sobriety where there was no sobriety. I hadn't picked up a drink yet, but I was ready to walk in front of a moving car. Drink was not the point. This is an opportunity to express gratitude, so... I'm there. I started drinking actually when I was 17, but my first drink was given to me by my grandmother when I was 3. And unfortunately, she died of this disease, but it just kind of establishes in your mind the kind of drinking culture on that side of my family. That part of my family were drinkers. And to make a long story short, that continued. Although it didn't start really, like I said, until I was 17. I was Miss Goody Two Shoes. I was in art and music and an honors kid. I had an operatic voice, and I was accepted not only at art schools but at music schools, prestigious music schools with, you know, nice juicy scholarships, and there I was. So God, you know, just dumped a bunch of gifts in my lap. But what I wanted was acceptance, and I wanted love. I was the fat kid on the block, not very popular, definitely shunned. You don't, you know, get real popular with an operatic voice in eighth grade. So... But, you know, it was something that made me unique, right? So anyway, I went and I did this camp when I was a senior in high school, because this was the gateway to my nirvana. This camp were a bunch of, you know, 12 four-year-olds, and we ran after these four-year-olds all summer long until it culminated in this party. And at this party was people who were like me, not necessarily in the drinking, because I hadn't yet found that, but in art and music. And so I found my people. And so what happened was I went to this party and proceeded on the first go to get hammered. And I walked through somebody's screen door and was greeted with a burst of applause. And I thought, this is perfect. So to make a long story short, I apologized to the mother of the house, and she said, don't worry about it, darling. You know, happens every year. So I was primed to go to college. In college, I got to college, and I was ready for my first voice lesson. And there I was. And, I met this whole bunch of Broadway babies and opera babies. And my friend Jean, who I can only describe to you succinctly as Red Fraggle from Fraggle Rock, said, hey, everybody, let's get some Bacardi 151. And, you know, in my household, my parents, neither of my parents were alcoholics. It was my, you know, grandparents that seemed to skip the generation and got me. But anyway, I said, what's Bacardi 151? And she said, well, it's rum. So I knew my father made rum and cokes. So it was, although his rum and cokes were, you know, just a little tiny, tiny bit of rum, so we felt like grown-ups when we were high school kids. So anyway, Solo cup, you know, red Solo, that big. That much Bacardi 1, that much Coke. I don't remember what happened to this day, what happened from 7:30 at night to the following morning at noon. I am told that it was very interesting. I had full conversations with people who the next day I didn't remember. You know, and I was very, very sick the next day. I made my apologies, but you know, it became an anecdote. And this is how the drinking progressed. You know, I wasn't much into drugs, so that's not really a part of my story. I'll touch upon, you know, a little bit of marijuana here and there, but believe me, it was all about alcohol. It was all the time. And it got to be where I would drink before a voice lesson. I would wait until the voice lesson, then right after the voice lesson, it was party time. And this progressed and this progressed. But you know how we do geographics. I didn't go from city to city or country to country. I went from college to college. And I transferred from SUNY Purchase and I got into Manhattan School of Music. And after the first year, found people who were jazzy people who liked to drink like me. And so instead of doing college in 4 years, I did college in 6 years and had a good old attitude. And then I went into service position in music, and you know, there went my years of possibilities of singing in opera companies. There went my possibilities. I would start with a teacher and get to a certain point and stop. So essentially, I was, in essence, destroying my future. And finally, you know, it continued and continued, and let me just cut to the chase. I started at 17, and the ending point for me was 31. And at 31, I actually, was it that age? Well, 1996 anyway, I moved into Queens. And, thank you. And to make a long story short, I found a bar that was right down the street from me, and driving was not a consideration, so it was perfect. And I drank there and I drank there. And finally, around 2000, I had gone from one job to another, all in colleges, mind you, pretty much, to working at FIT, and I lost that job. I had to quit before I was fired, and found I lost also my opportunity. I also draw and paint too. Oh, goody. That and 250 got me a downtown with no discipline. So anyway, I got to the point where it was just all about, I am this giant piece of you know what around which the world and all the planets spin. And I went out, I lost my scholarship, I lost my position in the school, I was supposed to be going further. And I was told, well, you can't go to school here anymore. Okay, so fine, I lost my job, and so I went out drinking, and it was my last drunk. I ended up at this gentleman's house, was in a real bad spot. And I found myself, it was this moment of clarity, which in what I thought was the middle of the night, and I woke up and I said, I need some money to go home. And he said, well, that would require me to go to an ATM. So I picked up my stuff and I got myself together and I picked up my briefcase and I went out these doors thinking, I'm going to show him. And I went to go up because I thought we were in a basement apartment, and I fell down about 15 to 20 cinder block stairs and sliced my head open. Out of the grace of God and this guy's conscience, he poured me in somehow, I don't know how he did it, he got me up these stairs, bleeding, poured me into a cab, got me to Astoria General, and I was 12-stepped by a social worker. And she said, you're so articulate, you're obviously educated, how do you find yourself in this space? And I said, well, you know, everything I touch turns to doo-doo. And she said, I think you're medicating yourself. And I said, I think you're right. Because what alcohol had done for me initially was made me feel invincible, made me beautiful, made me funny, made me fun. And at the end, it made me a comatose wreck. It made me sit in a bar on a good day and stare in that mirror in the back of the room. I got sober. My first year of sobriety was idyllic. I had some wonderful years, and then life got good. I became a teacher in my profession. I became a choral director. I started to think who I was. I went through one fiancé. I went through two fiancés. I got married. I had a baby. Nice apartment. Musician husband. It's all good. And I took a job that I believe now was a little too much for me to chew into, you know? And God let me. Thank God. Because I had become as dry as a bone. I was not doing service. I did not have sponsees. I was not out there seeing how I could help you. I was trying to see how I could help me. And last November, I wanted to walk in front of a car. And by the grace of God, God put in my sponsor right in front of me, who was a woman I walked into the rooms with. She came in 10 days after me, and she said, you're not working a program. Get rid of your sponsor. I'm your sponsor now. Don't know how ethical that was. But I made amends to that sponsor. Because it wasn't that sponsor's fault, it was my fault. I wasn't doing the work, and this woman was in my face, and she wanted to save my life. She did. She took me through the steps. She made me take commitments. And here's the pièce de résistance. When I got married, I did it. Thank you. I'll make this fast. I did this on the like that. I was pregnant. It's okay. I was 38. Anyway, it all works out for good kids. Anyway, I did this, but I didn't even announce to my friends and my network in Astoria that this was going to happen. And I didn't even create some kind of, and she said, you know what you're going to do? You're going to throw a party. And you're going to invite all those people who you didn't invite. And I did. And on top of it, she said, you're going to learn how to drive this summer. And I did. Didn't get my license yet, but I'm working on it. Anyway, she said, I'll take you to Price Club to get all the goodies, but you're driving. And I did. So my point is that I did, by doing for other people, I conquered my fears. By reaching out to other people, I stay sober. By helping you, I let God take care of my problems, because my problems are like that for him. You know? So with that, I'll close. Thank you so much for having me. This has been a blessing.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Diggs.
Hi, I'm Diggs, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Clinton, so much for having me to speak. Thank you, Jeffrey, for the great job you've been doing. Want to thank my sponsor, Andy, without whom I would not be standing here, all my sponsees who support me every day. Where do I begin? I was a man born with no definition, a person with no way of really knowing who he was, a person who didn't like who he was told he was and wanted to change that, but had very little power to do so. A man who thought that he was too small to face the world, and I was the type of person who was unhappy in spite of and often unjoyful in the face of and suffering because of the fact that I could not do anything about life. The life that I felt was given me. And soon I found alcohol. I was 17 years old when I took my first drink, and the drink didn't do much for me, but I knew that there was a definition in that bottle that I wanted to find again and again. I got caught. I got sent to AA. I was told that I couldn't drink anymore, and that's not the end of the story, as you could probably imagine. I was 21 years old when I drank again, and this time I drank like I knew I really wanted to. I started drinking with a progression that didn't end until my life almost ended. From that drink to my final drink, which years later was in Brooklyn, where supposedly all drinking stories end, I moved from a man who knew who he thought he was, knew a God that he thought he believed in, had friends that he thought he could trust, had a life that he thought he could depend on, to a person who showed up 2 weeks late for work and was told, we fired you 2 weeks ago. A man who decided in his mid-20s to do a blonde ambition summer and dyed my hair blonde and lived in my car. And I thought that I was doing it because I wanted to, but my sponsor told me, you know, you weren't really making a decision then. And oh, by the way, if your living room has a steering wheel in it, you're homeless. And I believe that. I came back in the rooms at 25, a broken man, a man who really did not understand what was going on. I thought I had all the answers to all the questions, and I questioned all the answers that were given to me. And I stayed sober for a long time. I really did, and I tried. I loved the applause when I would walk in the room, when I would do my cameo appearances and guest starring roles at meetings. I loved the effect of saying the smart thing, waiting for the guy that I was going to tell, you don't know what you're talking about. And I stayed dry for a long time. And then years later, I discovered that they call Bourbon Street in New Orleans Bourbon Street for a reason. I was there for a wedding. And unbeknownst to me, someone thought it was funny to put vodka in the lemonade. It had been years since I'd had a drink. And I thought it was funny to guzzle a half gallon of lemonade. And the next thing I know, I'm right back where I started. All right? So, where does that leave me today? I quickly went right back to where I was. I was having DTs within about a half hour. And I didn't know exactly what to do then. Because the God I believed in was somewhere up and on the left of my wall, slightly crooked, and I hadn't dusted it in a long time. When I came back, I was 12-step by a good friend who was in this room. And when I came back, I was told that you have to do things different this time. You can't have all the answers to all the questions, and you can't question all the answers that you're given. This time, you have to work as if your life depends on it. And the reason I had to is because, in fact, it did. As I said, I was usually unhappy in spite of, unjoyful in the face of, and certainly miserable and suffering because I was unwilling to do what the people in these rooms told me to do. And I've suffered for it greatly. I used to use excuses like, when I came in and I had a high bottom, and my sponsor told me, you know, you were drunk and high when you hit bottom, but your bottom wasn't very high. It really wasn't. And then I was introduced to the steps. I was told that if I wanted to get this, you know, we always hear you can't keep it unless you give it away. I was told by Stacy that I can't even get it if I'm not willing to give it away. I have to be willing to give it away before I get it. Because what was given to me wasn't for me. It was for the next person I was going to pass it to. It wasn't for me. And I didn't understand that because up until that point, everything had been for me. Everything you said to me had to be about me. Because that's how self-centered I was. But then I got introduced to the steps. And at that point, I still only had a belief in God. I had no faith in God, no faith that really works in good and rough going that we talk about. I had none of that, none of it at all. But then I was introduced to the steps. And I found God in every one of the steps, every single one. I found the gift of defeat in the first step. A man who was willing to throw up his hands and, like a wrestler, and say, I'm getting off this mat. I'm pinned. There's nothing I can do. And then I found the gift of demonstration in men and women like you in the second step. People who had done what I needed to do and were going to pass it on to me. The gift of direction in the third step, that I didn't have to make all the decisions anymore, that someone was going to be willing to make the decisions for me if I was willing to listen. The gift of discovery in the fourth step. The gift of disclosure in the fifth. Telling the truth finally to someone without reservation. And then in the sixth, grace over defect. Suddenly, I was alive again, and I could see that some of the things that I thought I hadn't been doing, I actually had been doing, and some of the things that I thought I had been doing, I hadn't been doing. Then grace over dependency in the seventh, no longer dependent upon these defects to define me. I could use something else. Because in the eighth step, I got grace over delusion. I had hurt people, and it was time for me to do something about it. Grace over destruction in the ninth step. Able to go back and rectify some of the things I had done all those years when I was sober and thought I wasn't doing anything wrong because I hadn't had a drink in a while, and that wasn't true. And then the gift of discipline in the tenth. Perseverance to keep doing what I was doing and not stop. The gift of discernment in the 11th step. A power greater than myself, faith beyond my wildest dreams. An innumerable amount of gifts given to me in a single step. Something I had never imagined before, something I never thought would be possible for me. And then finally, in the 12th step, with gratitude and generosity and witnessing the strength of this program, I got the gift of definition. Who am I? Is the question I asked. And I guess what I would say to the newcomer is we always ask that question, who am I? And it's a question worthy of asking. And what I would say is, when you come into these rooms, you are ours because we are yours. And that is the truth. And we are each other's because we are our higher powers. that binds us together in a unified group of men and women willing to stand with you, willing to be with you in good and rough going. If you came here looking for what's possible, you came to the wrong place. This is a house of miracles. This is a house where we do the impossible. This is a place where the impossible happens every single day. I'm proof of that, because it would not be possible for me to be here without you, without my sponsor, without my sponsees. I'm a man today who is happy in spite of circumstances, joyful in the face of very, very difficult things, and free because I'm standing here and because I try to be useful to someone every single day. That is the point of this program for me. Happiness, joy, freedom in abundance, and usefulness to God and my fellows. Without that, I am nothing. With it, I am everything, because you have given me everything, and I stand on it today. I'm grateful to be sober and grateful to be in this group tonight. Thank you.